Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. My special guest today is Dr. Joe Schwartz. Joe Schwartz is the director of McGill University's Office for Science and Society. Professor Schwartz has received numerous awards for teaching chemistry and has authored a number of best-selling books. Dr. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Joe Schwartz was recently featured in Bloomberg discussing Vani Hari, commonly known as the food babe, who peddles anti-GMO and anti-vaccination rhetoric to her credulous fans. The food babe is famous for her campaign against the Subway sandwich chain, where she bullied the restaurant into changing their ingredients due to her claims that the bread contained the same ingredients that go into making yoga mats. She also made headlines for calling out Starbucks with a campaign against their popular pumpkin spice lattes. Are pseudoscientific quacks such as the food babe just harmless cranks, or is this a dangerous trend that needs a truth vaccination with extra mercury? Dr. Schwartz, Vani Hari has been extremely successful in getting her anti-GMO, anti-vaccine message out to the public. Why do you think her rhetoric is so popular? Is it just because she's an attractive woman?
I don't think it's just because of that, although that is not a detriment. Mm-hmm. That gets her on many, many talk shows. Mm-hmm. I think that there is a danger here, not particularly in what she recommends. I mean, taking out azodicarbonamide from flour is not a big issue. Mm-hmm. But I think she plays the conspiracy card, and that, you know, food producers are all involved in somewhat trying to trick the public into buying poisons. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know what poisons mean or what the word toxic means. She just uses this randomly. Mm-hmm. And my main complaint about Vani is not that her heart isn't in the right place. I think it probably is. I think she wants to do good. It's the location of her brain that, you know, I'm concerned about. Yeah. Because it really isn't filled with scientific knowledge. She doesn't have any scientific background. She has some undergrad degree in computers. And that really isn't enough to get into the very, very complex world of nutrition and toxicology and certainly genetics, mm-hmm. of which she knows absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. It becomes very, very evident as soon as you start reading her blog. Mm-hmm. You know, anyone who's versed in science can immediately see between the lines, mm-hmm. and sees that her knowledge of GMOs is essentially zero. She believes that this is some kind of stuff that is sprinkled into food, or I mean, I don't know what she believes, but it's scientifically illiterate stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not dangerous. I mean, she's not recommending anything that is bad, mm-hmm. But it is the concept, mm-hmm. that we are living in a world full of poisons and toxins, mm-hmm. and that manufacturers are just trying to do us in. That's the toxic bullet that, mm-hmm. she dispenses.
I see. So, as we were talking about earlier, Vani Hari, she successfully campaigned at Subway using azodicarbonamide, which is the yoga mat ingredient, and she claimed that it's banned in countries like Singapore. Is it dangerous?
It isn't dangerous. We have very, very stringent laws about what kind of additives are allowed in our food. And no manufacturers have to jump through all kinds of hoops and hurdles before an ingredient is allowed. Yeah. And so it is with azodicarbonamide. It is put into bread for several reasons. It acts as a dough conditioner. It allows the gluten to develop better in the bread, so it rises better. It also has a small bleaching function. But the amount that is present in bread is insignificant. We're talking about a few milligrams, 10 milligrams at most, which is nothing in comparison to what has been shown to cause potential harm in animals. And this is one of the mistakes that she makes. And, you know, she confuses animal research with huge doses with what is present in our food. Yes, one can go through the scientific literature and find some study where massive amounts of azole dicarbonamide given to some animal caused some kind of problem. But that has nothing to do with the trace amounts that are found in our food supply. The other really curious allegation she makes is that if something is used for a purpose other than food, then it cannot be used safely in our food.
Right.
This is just nonsensical. The risk-benefit profile of a chemical has nothing to do with where and how it can be used. It has to do with what we know about it and how much we have studied it. Just because sodium hydrogen sulfate may be found in toilet bowl cleaner doesn't mean that it can't be safely used in baking soda or in baking powder. But to her, you know, this equivalence that if a chemical can be used to formulate bubbles in a plastic yoga mat, this already means that it's guilty and therefore cannot be used in our food supply. I mean, this is just absolute bunk, and it smacks of just a thimbleful, maybe not even, of scientific knowledge that she has.
Oh, one common saying we've been hearing from the Food Babe and some of her supporters is we shouldn't eat anything that we can't pronounce.
Right.
What's your take on that?
Well, you know, this is something that just affords comic relief to all of us in the world of science, because you cannot tell anything about the benefits or the risks of a chemical by the number of letters or the number of syllables in its name. Beta-fructofuranosyl alpha-D-glucopyranoside probably sounds frightening, and I'm sure that it would frighten the Food Babe.
Yeah.
But that's just the chemical term for ordinary sugar. Now, there are many, many reasons to control our sugar intake. That's for sure, because sugar is implicated in various diseases. However, the fact that it has many syllables in its name is not the reason to avoid it. But of course, this is very neat fear-mongering. And that's exactly what she is into. And of course, she is into also profiting from it, because on her website, you can buy all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it's also curious that she's just come out with a rant against fruit roll-ups.
Right.
Now, I'm not a big fan of these foods. And in fact, most of the foods that she attacks, I think the average person would know that these are in the junk food category, you know.
Right.
So that's of course we know that we shouldn't be eating it, but to suggest that these are poisons, that's going overboard. And then I look at the stuff that she's selling, and she's actually recommending some sort of gummy bears, or I guess gummy alligators, little alligator shaped things on her website as an alternative to fruit roll-ups. The fact is, I checked the nutrition profile. There's more sugar in those, about three times as much sugar,
really,
than in the fruit roll-ups. But the sugar, as the claim is, comes only from concentrated fruit juices. Well, so what? Sugar is sugar. It doesn't matter where it comes from. And the big marketing feature, I think, as far as she's concerned about those gummy alligators, is that they contain no gluten. Well, of course, they contain no gluten. They're not grain.
Yeah.
And that, quote, no GMOs. They are GMO-free.
Yeah, I always love it when I see, like, hamburgers, like, just like hamburger meat, it's gluten-free. It's like, oh, no kidding.
Right. And, you know, my main objection, I guess, against the stuff that she promotes is her anti-GMO stand. You know, the rest of it is kind of fluff. I mean, whether or not there's azole dicarbonamide in our bread really is immaterial. But creating this fear of genetically modified foods is very material because this technology has great hope for the future. You know, we know that there's massive vitamin A deficiency in the world. Of course, not here, it's in developing countries. And advances like golden rice have a chance of putting a dent into that problem. No, they're not going to be the total solution. No one is suggesting that genetic modification is the answer to the world's nutritional problems. It's a tool that can be used. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when people get scared of it, mm-hmm. then, of course, we lose the chance of using that as a tool. Mm-hmm. And she is instrumental in creating such scares mm-hmm. by outright nonsensical insinuations. For example, chocolate. Mm-hmm. Well, there are, of course, reasons to not eat too much chocolate. Mm-hmm. But what's her argument? Is that an emulsifier used in chocolate called lecithin, which is used in very, very small amounts, can be made from corn, and that corn may be genetically modified. Therefore, according to her, the chocolate contains GMOs and should be avoided.
Mm. Now, I definitely want to get into GMOs in just a second, but I want to ask you one question. You know, most of these food manufacturers and these restaurant chains seem more than willing to sort of pay her off through consulting fees, right? And they're doing this rather than fight her. Do you think that that's a mistake, that the industry needs to start standing up to these kinds of people and their bullying?
I think it is. I think promoting something that's wrong is never right, even if the goal is justified. Mm-hmm. I'm not arguing against getting rid of many of these junk foods. Mm-hmm. I think it should be limited. However, you have to use proper scientific arguments. Now, she's not alone in this. You know, you look at someone like Jamie Oliver, mm-hmm. the British chef, who came to America to find a solution to the cafeteria problems in our schools. A very admirable goal. And to tell you the truth, I like Jamie. I think he's a neat guy. I think he tries to do the right things. Mm-hmm. However, when he suggests that we should be staying away from ice cream sundaes because it contains human hair and because it contains shellac and because it contains beaver gland extracts, mm-hmm. that's ridiculous. That's okay. Ridiculous. We should be staying away from ice cream sundaes, not totally, of course, but we should curb our intake because of the high fat content and the high sugar content, mm-hmm. not because it might contain some shellac.
Right.
Saying the wrong things mm-hmm. scientifically, to me, is never the right way to go about it. Mm-hmm. We have to approach the nutritional problems we have, and we have. Mm-hmm. We do consume too much salt, we do consume way too much sugar, and our fat intake also is probably too much.
Right.
But we need to address this on proper scientific grounds, mm-hmm. not through hearsay, certainly not through emotion, and not through the silly scientific illiterate words that she spews.
Now, there has been some pushback against the anti-GMO activists in general, but they're still gaining traction. You know, there was a push by scientist, celebrity scientist Neil deGrasse Tyson, who got a lot of flack for coming out against them. Why do you think there's so much fear about GMOs in general? And do you think it's because these activists are smoking too much genetically modified marijuana, maybe?
I think it comes from a lack of understanding. Ignorance breeds fear. Mm-hmm. And the concept of biotech and genetic modification is not an easy one to get across to the public. Mm-hmm. Most people do not have a feel for what a gene is, what it does. And the technology itself is actually quite complicated technology, difficult to describe to anyone, who has no scientific background. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the main reasons that people fear this technology is because they don't see any personal benefit from it. And so far, of course, that is true. The benefit come to farmers. And if a farmer gets a 10% better yield from his canola because he's using herbicide-resistant canola, well, the average person in the street doesn't care about that. The average person in the street doesn't know what canola is, doesn't know if you hunt it or you fish it or you grow it.
Yeah.
So it makes no difference to them. But if they saw some benefit, mm-hmm. that would be a completely different story. In the 1990s, the Flavor Saver tomato was introduced as the first product of genetic engineering. And we were supposed to have tomatoes in February that tasted like you picked them off the vine in August.
Right.
The hope was there. Unfortunately, it wasn't delivered. Mm-hmm. And the Flavor Saver tomato wasn't any better than any tomato. The technology was just not ripe enough at that time. So the Flavor Saver tomato disappeared. Mm-hmm. But it left a bad taste in people's mouths about genetic engineering. I suggest that if the original Flavor Saver tomato would have worked, if it really would have tasted mm-hmm. like a tomato picked in August, I don't think we'd be having this kind of debate now.
That's interesting.
So, we need something that people can identify with.
Okay.
So that eventually, if we find, you know, that you can deliver that tomato that is genetically modified, I think people will see the benefits.
Oh, okay. Well, I just have a few more questions for you before we go, and I'd like to move on to a separate topic. Now, people in the first world are beginning to eschew vaccinations due to fear spread by people like Food Babe about what's in them. You know, she provided a long list of dangerous sounding chemicals that are in our vaccinations. Do you believe we have anything to fear from vaccines?
No. This is one of the most ridiculous fear-mongering that I have seen. I mean, this everything else that the Food Babe says pales in comparison to any kind of anti-vaccination stand. Mm-hmm. Vaccination is probably the greatest medical breakthrough in the history of the world. It has saved more lives than anything else. The only thing that comes close, perhaps, is chlorination of water. Mm-hmm. No technology is 100% safe. Mm-hmm. Nobody says that there cannot be rare complications to vaccination. But the benefits so far outweigh the risks that it isn't even discussable. And, you know, even if you would give in to the nonsensical argument that vaccination is linked to autism, which it isn't, numerous studies have shown that that is not the case. Even if it were the case, the benefits would still greatly outweigh any kind of detriment.
Right.
Millions of lives have been saved. And now we are already seeing epidemics of measles. We're seeing whooping cough, something that we haven't seen for decades. Mm-hmm. And it is all because of people fearing vaccination. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just going to get worse. Right now, the problem is still not huge, and the reason is because we have what is called herd immunity. Mm-hmm. We still have enough people vaccinated so that we're not getting epidemics. But if it starts to decrease, we're going to see huge problems in this area. So, you know, while I don't take such a big issue against her silly railing against, you know, fruit roll-ups or coffee, this is a very serious business. Recommending that people do not vaccinate is going to affect others as well. It doesn't only affect the person who's not vaccinated.
Right. A recent headline from The Atlantic showed that vaccination rates in wealthy Los Angeles are as low as South Sudan's. Several schools in the area are reportedly at high risk for outbreaks. Do you think that the tide is only going to turn when we see kids dying from polio again?
Unfortunately, that is the case. And people just are not aware of the benefits of vaccination now because they have grown up with those benefits. I mean, I remember, you know, when I was in elementary school, we still had kids in my class who had polio, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, we don't see that anymore. People don't realize that vaccination has completely wiped out a disease. That disease is smallpox. Mm-hmm. It no longer exists. It's been completely wiped out. Mm-hmm. So the benefits dramatically outweigh any kind of risk. But of course, the anti-vaccine people will take that small smidgen of risk and blow it completely out of proportion. Mm-hmm. I think we have to understand that nothing in life is risk-free. Everything is a question of evaluating the risk-benefit ratio. And when you look at vaccination, there's just no contest mm-hmm. in the risk-benefit ratio. So I think people like Andrew Wakefield, who published that paper in The Lancet, essentially accusing vaccination of doing harm, these people have done a great disservice to the public. Mm-hmm. And of course, exactly what the motivation is somewhat of an open question, but you know that paper was withdrawn and there have been allegations of fraud involved in the research as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, so one last question. This is big picture. You're a pretty media savvy science professor, Dr. Joe. You've been on the Discovery Channel and on television quite a bit, but it's pretty safe to say most scientists probably aren't. Now, how can science dorks compete against crazy quacks who have charisma and sex appeal?
You're absolutely right. And these, quote, crazy quacks also are trained in how to talk to the media. Right. They're very savvy about that. Mm-hmm. Whereas most researchers are very happy to work in their labs and their offices and not be interviewed. In fact, very often they're scared of being interviewed because they're scared of somehow their words being taken out of context. And also because they don't do this very commonly, you know, they're not very good at explaining. And they don't really realize how specific the language is to their research. Mm-hmm. You know, if you speak to someone who's doing research in genomics or any, some aspect of biotechnology, they, of course, use words in their everyday language that become extremely common, but which are totally foreign to the average person. So when you hear an interview with a research scientist, it doesn't sound very convincing and it sounds almost incomprehensible. Whereas people like the Food Babe, who have essentially zero knowledge, are very media savvy. And they know how to parrot the words that they've read on the internet, you know, from pseudo experts like Mike Adams and Joe Mercola, you know, the fearmongers out there. Mm-hmm. But they're very adept at you know, couching those words in pseudoscientific lingo. How do you fight this? Well, we just have to keep trying. You know, we have to get more and more scientists out there speaking and get them to think about how to interact with the media and how to get the message across in a way that is understandable and, you know, take away all of the complex language.
Seems like you're a perfect example for that. Professor Schwartz, director of McGill University's Office for Science and Society. Professor, thank you very much for your time today.
Well, thanks very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you enjoyed this episode of The Freedom Report, do me a favor. Go to iTunes and subscribe to get our episodes every single day. If you don't have an Apple product, you can download the app Stitcher on your Android device, and you can listen to us there. And if you really enjoy the show, do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review over on iTunes. And if you really enjoy us and you want to help us out, do me a big favor and leave us a strong, positive, written review on iTunes telling us how much you really enjoy the show. Thanks very much.